Good morning. I'm Teresa Andre of Foley and Lardner on behalf of the appellant, Johnson Controls. Your Honors, this appeal presents the question whether the arbitrator acted with the authority conferred upon him by the party's agreement or instead decided issues beyond those which the parties agreed to submit to arbitration.
So I have a preliminary...
Was he a lawyer, the arbitrator?
He was. He is.
Did the arbitration agreement call for arbitration by a lawyer?
It did not specify who the arbitrator would be, and then the arbitrator.
How was he selected?
By mutual agreement of the parties, we each compiled a list of arbitrators that would be possibilities. Actually, we didn't compile the list; the AAA did. And then
the American Arbitration Association
correct.
Was helping
yes.
organize things.
Yes. Right. And then the parties kind of wilted the list down to an arbitrator we could agree to.
So my preliminary question for you is I find it surprising that this whole case was proceeding under Chapter 1 of the Federal Arbitration Act as opposed to Chapter 2 or 3, because if ever a case looked like something that belonged under either, probably more likely the Panama Convention for Inter-American Arbitration, or failing that, the New York Convention, if you focus on the British Virgin Islands nature of one of the parties, this would be it.
It was just pursuant to the actual arbitration provision in the party's distribution agreement.
You said it would be Chapter 1?
It did not. It said the construction rules of the American Arbitration Association.
Right. I'm not sure if that's right. But, you know, I think one of your biggest problems is that the arbitrator in his award says, I am not going to adjudicate any claims of Pinnacle. I'm only going to adjudicate claims that are between Johnson Controls and Edmund, and he does so. You know, Edmund is essentially serving as an intermediary. Maybe it used Pinnacle as an agent, but it's a party to the contract. And we don't review arbitral awards for correctness.
Well, I agree with you that, and we fully understand that typically arbitrators' findings are not subject to appellate review, but that you know, principle runs directly into the principle that has been recognized by the Supreme Court in this circuit that parties cannot be compelled to arbitrate disputes when they haven't agreed to. And here,
but Pinnacle isn't arbitrating. It's not a party to the arbitration. The arbitrator says it's not. I mean, I know that abstract rule, but I just see no way that it applies to this situation. It seems to me the worst you could say is that the measure of damages that the arbitrator attributed to Edmund had too much to do with Pinnacle and not enough to do with Edmund. But it's really, that's at the level of detail that we don't review.
Well, we think you can review that based on this court's precedent in AGCO Corporation versus England and Elger Manufacturing versus Cohen Development. In both of those cases, the arbitrator made the exact same determination the arbitrator made here, which was that the claims asserted were within the scope of the arbitration agreement. And actually, in both of those cases, the district court...
No, you say he neglected Wisconsin law, but I think he garbled it. He said, I conclude that Edmund has standing to assert claims in its own right, but that it does not have standing to pursue any claim that was exclusively owned by either of its then subsidiaries. That's a correct statement of Wisconsin law. Then he goes on, and I don't actually understand what he means. But he says this conclusion does not mean that Edmund is necessarily denied ability to recover losses initially incurred by its subsidiaries, that Edmund is not precluded from seeking to recover lost profits that it claims would have been enjoyed by Edmund and its subsidiaries on a consolidated basis from those contracts. Now, I don't know what that means, but I think he's saying this is Wisconsin law, you know. Edmund doesn't have standing to pursue its subsidiaries' claim, but he then interprets the law further to mean that somehow, because of this consolidation or something, that general rule doesn't apply. There's this exception for this case. Now, it'd be an example of he's applying Wisconsin law, probably incorrectly, but he's trying to do that because he recognized the basic principle, and then he argues that it isn't applicable.
And what he's also saying, and I mean, I agree with all of that, actually, and he's understanding that Edmund was hoping to get some profit out of this arrangement, and this would be a completely different case. It would look much more like the Cryer case if Pinnacle had been trying to get Johnson Controls to arbitrate, maybe if it were at the stage of enforcing an agreement to arbitrate instead of the award stage. But it isn't. It's Edmund seeking to arbitrate with Johnson Controls. And that's why I get back to the measure of damages. Edmund certainly is damaged by what, you know, according to the findings of fact the arbitrator made, by what Johnson Controls did, because it's not getting the profit it expected out of the arrangement. How it was damaged is sort of a second-level question, and that's where the arbitrator may have gotten all confused about consolidated statements or whatever else it was talking about.
Well, I think we need to step back and say, was there an agreement to arbitrate that encompassed the claims that were actually brought in this case?
And yes, there's an agreement to arbitrate between the two parties to the arbitration for claims arising out of this arrangement to provide under which Edmund would be the agent for Johnson's fire safety, CCTV, and access control devices in Panama. That's what this arbitration was about.
Except it wasn't in the arbitrator's findings of fact, which we are not disputing, make clear that it was. And that's because the arbitrator awarded two types of damages. One, for a lost bid that was submitted by Pinnacle, and the arbitrator and Edmund both concede that was submitted by Pinnacle, and two, for build-out of office spaces that were paid for by Pinnacle. So the claims that were actually arbitrated were claims that belonged to Pinnacle entities that Edmund Controls tried to lump into the arbitration agreement and arbitrate. And while this court's ability to review arbitrator's award is very limited, it can dig under the surface and say, okay, were these claims subject to arbitration in the first place?
I've never seen a case that goes as far as you are urging us to go when the correct parties are arbitrating, and essentially you're saying one party can't recover for losses it incurred that perhaps were incurred at the first instance by an agent that it used, but ultimately it's losses. There certainly are some losses that Edmund could recover directly, and I'm just very concerned if we were to go your way, I think you would destroy the utility of arbitration. The use of agents is extremely common in the business world, especially actually in international transactions.
Well, Your Honor, there was no evidence, and it did not form the basis for the arbitrator's decision that Edmund and Pinnacle were agents. The fact of the matter
Pinnacle
is...
Pinnacle was an agent of Edmund. I mean, why, you don't have to use the word. It's obvious they were. They were undertaking work on behalf of Edmund.
Well, and I just want to be clear. Nobody's saying that Pinnacle couldn't assert their own claims. It's just that they couldn't assert a claim against JCI in arbitration when JCI did not agree to arbitrate with them. That's a fundamental
principle.
Sure,
but there was no restriction on Edmund in the agreement on how it would do business in Panama. If it chose to use its affiliate Pinnacle to do that, that's something the arbitrator can consider in determining whether Edmund's been damaged.
Well, except that the arbitration agreement in the provision said that it was limited to disputes between the parties. And the ABCS agreement, the distribution agreement, said that it was between Johnson Controls and Edmund, and those were the only parties.
But sometimes there's a clause in an agreement that says the parties expect that the work under this agreement will be done only by Edmund, and if you wish to contract it out to others, there has to be written agreement and the like. That's what I think Judge Tinder is pointing out. There is no such clause here.
There's not, but I just want to speak directly to Your Honor. You had mentioned you're not aware of any cases, and I think both this court's precedent in AGCO Corporation versus England, that's 216 F3D.
I think those are different. I just don't see those cases as presenting this kind of lineup.
And in both of those cases, the arbitrator concluded that the claims were within the scope of the arbitration agreement. And and the district court agreed, and this court looked at the actual claims being asserted, not whether in theory a claim within the scope of the arbitration could have been asserted. And again, here, the only damages that the arbitrator awarded were for bids submitted by Pinnacle and for build-out expenses paid for by Pinnacle. There is simply no arbitration agreement between Pinnacle and Johnson Controls. Now, as far as the arbitrator, you know, tries to defend against that by saying, well, Edmund can recover for Pinnacle's injuries because it's the parent.
Well, I'm going to just interrupt you and say, in paragraph 53 of the arbitrator's award, I think he is essentially saying this was an agency relationship. This doesn't mean Edmund's necessarily denied the ability to recover losses initially incurred by its subsidiaries, made a business decision to establish the corporate structure pursuant to which it conducted the business it was authorized by JCI to conduct. Pursuant to the agreement, JCI knew about the business structure, expressed no objection to it. I don't know what else that could all be about, other than agency, frankly.
Well, I see my red lights on, and I can come back to that again, though. The arbitration agreement included a choice of law provision that said Wisconsin law applied. The Supreme Court in Courier said without equivocation that parent corporations cannot sue for damages incurred by subsidiaries.
It's different, but anyway, we'll
okay.
deal with
okay.
that.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Andre. Mr. Anguera?
Anguera. Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Counsel. Your Honor, the district court in this case made two findings of fact. The first finding of fact that the district court made in its decision on confirming the award and denying the motion to vacate was that the contract gave the arbitrator authority to resolve Edmund's claims. And the second finding was the arbitrator's decision was based on his interpretation of the contract and Wisconsin law. The Supreme Court of the United States tells us in the first options case that absent clear error, those findings of fact should stand. And there is no clear error in this case that you can find from this record. The district court goes on to find that, in a conclusion of law, that the arbitrator did not exceed his authority. Because of the limited standard of review under the FAA for arbitrator decisions, there's no error here. In fact, this appeal, as I have suggested in my papers, is frivolous. It's important to note that this arbitration occurred over 4 days. Over 16 witnesses testified. That's all in the record. That's in the arbitrator's decision. And what is not in there is over 300 exhibits were received by this arbitrator. This is a lot like, in my opinion, the BEM 1 case from this circuit in 2002.
Is there a transcript of the arbitration?
There is a transcript. I'm sorry, Your Honor. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, go ahead.
There is a transcript of the arbitration. It was not submitted before the district court. It's not typically done because of the case law that says you don't do a full appellate review.
Was there any discussion of Wisconsin law?
Yes, there was. In fact, the papers submitted in the appendix by Johnson Controls are exclusively discussions of Wisconsin law. In addition, there's also in the arbitrator's opinion, throughout the opinion, there are references to Wisconsin law, cases decided in Wisconsin, and also jury instructions in Wisconsin. I understand they're not precedential, but it certainly was persuasive to the arbitrator. He cited them in his opinion. He cited no other jurisdiction's law with respect to the claims in the case. And it's important to note going back to the BEM 1 decision in 2002 from the circuit, that if the arbitrator tried to apply the law, even if he was wrong, and I'm not conceding he was wrong in this case, but even if he was wrong, that's the end of the story according to the law in this circuit and the Supreme Court. And the language used in the BEM 1 decision I find particularly relevant. The loser gets no appellate review in that particular context. And the only way they can get appellate review is to create a jurisdictional argument or a standing argument and say, oh, my God, he violated his authority, the arbitrator, in this case. Well, that's not the case. And, in fact, in Hallam, this court in 2008 warned the parties not to use arbitrator authority as a ruse to get full appellate review. And that's exactly what Johnson Controls has done here.
Was the Career case one of those discussed before the arbitrator?
It was one of those discussed before the arbitrator. If you look at the appendix, Johnson's post-hearing briefs, significantly or expansively discuss Crier. And it's important, too, because even though the arbitrator in his award didn't mention Crier, it is important because his ruling is in line with Crier. Crier opinion is used by Johnson for that argument that the arbitrator had no authority. The reality is if you look at note 13 in the Crier decision, footnote 13 says that the only claims that Edmund, in this particular scenario, could make are those they owned individually. Well, that's exactly what the arbitrator said. He said, I'm only going to look at Edmund's claims. On the basis of claims, and the district judge made a finding that Johnson's argument was wrong because the arbitrator made that finding. And that was another finding of fact by the district court that, again, absent clear error, is not reviewable or should not be set aside. But
well,
if you,
the facts
but,
anyway are a little different in Crier, aren't they? I mean, you have plaintiffs who are trying to sue accountants for harms to corporation number one based only on their interest in businesses that dealt with that corporation.
And I agree.
So it was a step removed.
And I agree with you. I agree with the court with respect to that particular issue. But I'm relying on Crier because Judge Posner had raised the Crier decision. And, in fact, I think it's illustrative because in that same note 13 in the Crier decision, the Wisconsin Supreme Court says that gives an example of a situation where someone can make a direct claim. And that's when they are a party to the exact contract. In this particular case, the contract, the only contract in which the claim for breach of duty of good faith and fair dealing could be raised is the contract between Edmund and Johnson Controls. That's the very same contract that the arbitrator found that claim was breached on. Once that is done, that's Edmund's claim. That's no other claim. The arbitrator, under Wisconsin law, is free to attempt to assess damages. Now, I agree with the court. The opinion of the arbitrator is, in many respects, garbled. It gets caught in the mud, so to speak. But I think there's enough in the opinion to suggest that the arbitrator was also looking at the direct damages of Edmund. For instance, the arbitrator expressly says Edmund's allowed to get its direct damages, and then it says, admittedly, and or indirect damages. But it does use the word direct. In another portion of the arbitrator's
award. Does he mean consequential? What does he mean by indirect?
I think he means indirect by virtue of what flows in these consolidated financials. And I'll answer the point about consolidated financials. But I think he means in the sense of what flows to Edmund by virtue of the consolidated damages. And in Panama, which is where these corporations operated, there was testimony, it's not before the record, but there was testimony that consolidated financials are allowed by corporations who operate business in Panama. Setting that aside for a minute, there is a section in the arbitration award in which the arbitrator talks about the amount of sales that Edmund had, and it discusses numbers for different years. And in that analysis, that same, very same paragraph, the arbitrator says, and some of those included Pinnacle's damages. Now, by implication, that means Edmund...
Because I noticed in the footnote you mentioned, Crier talks about the shareholders' entitlement to a dividend, which would be also the parents' entitlement to dividends from a wholly owned subsidiary. Is the notion that Edmund was deprived of revenues it would have obtained from Pinnacle, whether in the form of dividends or some other kind of
right.
internal payment? Is that?
I wouldn't use the word dividend in this analysis, but the testimony at the hearing, and again, it's not in the record, was that the revenues flowed to Edmund. So Edmund was the ultimate party who captured the revenues. And in this particular case, I think...
Some quirk of Panamanian corporation law, then?
I don't know if it's a quirk, Your Honor. I know it's allowed under Panamanian. At least there was testimony.
So you're saying this is really what you said about the consolidated financial returns?
Right. That's correct, Your Honor.
Instead of having to actually transfer the dividend, it would all show up on the return.
That's correct. But separate and apart from that, that whole theory that we've just discussed, is also the reference in the arbitration award by the arbitrator that Edmund sales were X, of which included some of the numbers from Pinnacle. So I think by implication, there was a discussion, again, not explicit in the opinion. I think the district judge caught that. I think this case is a lot like the flexible manufacturing case, in which, in that case, the movement sought to the movement sought to foreclose or claim there was a bar on future profits because the contract had been terminated by him. So there was no future profits after the termination. The court said in flexible manufacturing, wait, that's the arbitrator's decision about who breached. And once they determined who breached, then they could move on to assess damages. And I think the term used by the Seventh Circuit in that opinion was, and that's the end of it at that point, and that's the end of it at this point. And I think, Judge, if I can turn to the last issue, which wasn't discussed, but I want to address it briefly, this issue of the attorney's fees calculation. That's issue number 3 in appellant's brief. And I think this is a scenario where shorter is better on this analysis. This court has made clear mandate on for district courts on how to determine contract fee determinations on a contract-based indemnity provision. And they've gone to clear directives. They've even admonished district courts on remand not to consider the hour-by-hour detailed analysis that you find in Lodestar. Last year in the Matthews decision, the court told the appellant raised a similar argument. There should be an argument. There should be a detailed analysis. And the court in that Matthews decision said, no, there shouldn't. So when there is such clear directive, again, in the contract-based fee indemnity provisions, and the district court followed that directive, I'm hard-pressed to see where that's an abuse of discretion, especially when the judge received all the evidence and analyzed the case pursuant to the case law of the Seventh Circuit. So for these reasons, I think the appeal should be denied. And I do believe, and I continue to believe, that it's a frivolous appeal when you consider that the Halem case, that this is just a ruse to get this court to look at the underlying facts.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Anguera. Ms. Andre, how much time does she have? We have no time, but do you have something further? You can have a minute.
Thank you for the additional time. I have just 2 real brief points. The first being that because this relates to whether there's jurisdiction for the arbitrator to hear this dispute, it is something that this court can review. And I just want to address Judge Posner, your question about the Career case. We cited that to the arbitrator in our summary judgment decisions at the beginning of the hearing and then in post-hearing briefing. The arbitrator says nothing about that case in his decision. And, in fact, as we pointed out in our reply brief, implements a principle that is 180 degrees different in that the arbitrator says that Edmund can recover for Pinnacle's damages because it's the parent and those profits would eventually flow up. The Supreme Court in Career said very emphatically a parent doesn't have standing to sue for a subsidiary or a sister's injuries. Now, there were other issues, Judge Wood, at issue with the Career case, but there was a claim by EOG Disposal to seek damages suffered by EOG Environmental, which the court said it did not have standing to do, even though it was a sister corporation.
So, but the Wisconsin Supreme Court in the Cryer case must have been talking about Wisconsin corporations. Corporate law is not the same in every country around the world.
That's exactly right, and that's why we point out there's a choice of law provision in the contract. The arbitrator
But you can't choose the internal law of a Panamanian corporation. You can choose Wisconsin law, but it'd be like saying, you know, a French Société Anonyme, you know, is going to have the attributes of Wisconsin corporation. You can't say that. I mean, a corporation is whatever the law of the creating jurisdiction, and I bet that's what Wisconsin choice of law says, by the way.
The provision says that disputes under the agreement are subject to Wisconsin law.
I understand. But okay. I'm making a different point. That's all right.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you to both.